21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
It's all about soul. It's all about faith and a deeper devotion. It's all about soul. 'Cause under love is a stronger emotion.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. Laura Kortner is our executive producer, and Noah Dankner runs our board. Continuing our discussion with Dr. Reverend Karen Tate, her book, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World, is a Changemakers Books 2014 release. And again, www.karentate.com is where you can reach her to follow up with things. And also, don't forget that all of our guests are linked on the front page of 21st.centuryradio.com. And you can also check out our growing YouTube channel at youtube.com/21st.centuryradio.com. So continuing this discussion of sort of the rising voices of the sacred feminine and how people are becoming aware, certainly one of the themes, I believe, that has really sort of made people understand that this is about unity. It's not about women becoming power brokers. It's not about women becoming masters of people's fate. It's about all of us being equal in choosing our own fates. And I think that the earth and environmental movement makes this the most clear place of why the work is about all of us. Talk to us a bit, Karen, about all the people you've interviewed about, whether it's fracking or nuclear energy or GMOs. You and I have covered a lot of the same issues that are really challenging our well-being on this planet and the future of our planet.
Well, thank you, Zoe. I mean, it is such a huge subject. So, I mean, we could talk about this for hours. So it's fortunate we can, you know, continue in this next hour. But, you know, we sort of briefly touched on it before. You know, the sacred feminine, those ideals, those archetypes, they point to a society that's concerned about the collective, that's about the we and the us. You know, not just a few select people who benefit from everything. You know, it's about all of us having a better quality of life. And in our current situation, that's not the way it is. You know, people say we have a democracy. Well, you know, I don't think we have a democracy. I think, you know, we have an oligarchy. We have, the richest corporations who buying our politicians. I mean, how else can we say it but right. to just say it? Because, you know, there's no campaign finance reform. We have Citizens United to contend with. And it's gotten to the point where the people who can give politicians the most money, well, they are the only ones that have a voice. And what does that mean? That means a few people on the planet have all the power. I think last time I did some research on it, I think it was something like 400 people hold the vast majority of worth of wealth on the planet. Now, that's unconscionable, isn't it? When you have those few people who are looking out for their interest, I mean, it's no wonder that the earth is being exploited, people are being exploited. It's gotten to the point where everything is geared toward what's the best for the corporation, and not what's the best for all the humans on the planet. Because we have all of this deregulation that allows corporations or bankers or the oil companies, to do what the military-industrial complex, you know, all of these to just do whatever they want to do, very short-term thinking so that they increase their profits, even if it means, you know, they're poisoning the planet, they're poisoning the people, we're going into needless wars of choice, you know, solving conflicts with, you know, violence against violence. I mean, some people would say, I mean, look at the report that came out recently about the Bush administration and the CIA. I mean, I know it's controversial, but some people would say that, you know, all we did was answer terrorism with more terrorism. And we can't keep this escalation going. You know, we have to dial it back, because it is really about what's better for the most people on the planet, not what's just best for the United States or what's best for white Christian men, or, you know, it's got to be about what's best for the most of us. That includes immigrants. That includes gay people. That includes women. You know, that includes, you know,
animals. That includes animals and children and the ecosystem.
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely. So it is about the we and the us. You know, it's not about what's just best for, you know, a small elite group of people who right now are, you know, are pulling all the strings. And quite frankly, I am so ready for, you know, for that peaceful resistance, you know, when we all get out in the street like they did about Ferguson, because we really do have to create, I think, an air of solidarity, you know, whether it's, you know, immigrants who are not getting a fair shake, or gay people, or women, you know, or all the different exploited classes that, you know, we all have to stand together in solidarity so that we all have a better quality of life. We have hope, and, you know, we don't continue this downward spiral, you know, as we see income disparity grow, as we see the disappearance of the middle class, as we see, you know, people can't afford to get an education, or they have to work two or three jobs and still can't afford to send their kids to college, and they're having trouble paying for health care. I mean, it's really gotten ridiculous, and I think the people who are calling the shots for us all, they're so buffered, you know, from what everyday life is like. You know, they're millionaires who in many cases have inherited all of their money. You know, they don't really have a clue about what it's like to be an average citizen.
When I've interviewed John Perkins and others over the years, and when I used to be a whistleblower on the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and sort of the oligarchy you referred to, which Noam Chomsky has talked about for decades so beautifully, one of the things that I was always sort of confounded by is, why is it that people who participate in it? You know, people would say that of the Nazi regime. Why would a good German do what they're told? And so when you interview all these different people, one of the questions I'm always sort of grappling with is, what is it that takes any one of us? Why is it that any one of us doesn't grab on to what Ingo Swann would call the real power, which is our inner power? You know, stealth power is intuition. Stealth power is dream power, where you dream solution. As you pointed out, passive resistance, and it doesn't have to be passive in the sense of not meaning something, but pacifistic in that it's not violent, has a tremendous wave. Let's talk a little bit about the physics of activism, because there's different kinds of action, and each has its own way of impacting matter.
Well, you know, I think, you know, many people aren't tapped in to, you know, what you just described. You know, I think it all depends on, you know, where are we getting our information? You know, are we tuning into news channels that every day divide us, encourage us to hate somebody who's not like us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or are we... you know, are we trying to, you know, elevate ourselves? Are we trying to appeal to the better natures, you know, within us? And I think we don't have enough role models out there, quite frankly, that are telling us to be better people. Instead, you know, we have a media that, quite frankly, I think encourages too many people to sort of perform at their, you know, lowers the bar, you know, sort of the lowest common denominator. And that has sort of become normal, you know. I can remember when we used to admire people who, you know, had wonderful educations. Well, now that doesn't seem to be the case. You know, it seems more and more, you know, we wear ignorance, you know, as a badge of honor. You know, facts don't matter. I mean, look at the people who think the world is 6,000 years old, when all they'd have to do would be to walk into a museum and see goddess artifacts that are 30 and 40,000 years old. You know, people have become conditioned to be sheeple, to become consumers, and I don't think, you know, they are trying to improve themselves. Instead, they are letting themselves be, led around, it's almost as if their existence is just to, buy the latest new gadget that comes out.
Well, it's interesting. I commented once that when we have these terrible snowstorms and you watch on television people who wait till they're told to go home because they're afraid that if they leave work a little early, something will happen, generally nothing. But there's such fear of losing something that you can't afford to lose, such as a job. And then they put their lives at risk going home in the snowstorm and then being put upon on the highway for some 10, 12, 20 hours. And I remember watching that and thinking to myself, what is wrong with everybody? What has happened to people's ability to make their own free, willing decisions about their own well-being? I mean, I remember as a kid, I'm lucky, I grew up with a very iconoclastic-oriented mother who believed that rules were okay to a certain extent, but when you use your own mind, sometimes you could see a rule could really harm your life or even kill you. And that it's always important to ask, is it important right now for me to, stop at the red light, or should I go through the red light because I can see somebody else isn't braking and they're going to slide and I'm not, it's the same kind of, it concerns me deeply when I watch these younger kids who don't like being disconnected from the all. And I'm talking about the way that social media has made it so that people feel they have a power that's not real power. They have destructive power to go and destroy somebody's life in a day by posting their cyberbullying or false information that nobody sues anybody for anymore, and slander isn't slander, and libel isn't libel, because everybody's anonymous, and everybody can tweet and say whatever they feel like. And I keep thinking to myself, whatever happened to just basic manners?
Well, and accountability. Think you've tapped into something there. We can get on Facebook, and I think now it's changed. I'm not sure you can still get in on there with a phony name anymore, but we used to be able to get on there with a phony name. You can say anything to anybody, be as nasty and discourteous as you want to be, and of course maybe somebody's going to block you if you are. But it's as if, we've lost our manners. We have lost our critical thinking. It's almost as if some people, not all, because I think some people are working very hard about to evolve and elevate ourselves. But I think there's another caliber of person who is really devolving. And even though I think all of the social media, in one sense, connects us more than we've ever been connected before, and we know what's going on around the world, I think we are losing our social skills. Mm-hmm. I think we are losing that feeling of, think about what it's like when you go out in the street and you march with signs. What an incredible rush. What incredible solidarity you feel. When you're there, standing shoulder to shoulder with these other folks, and you're doing your chants, and you're, getting attention, and you're making people hear you. I mean, you feel empowered. And I don't think people engage in that anymore. And I think because they don't actually have that tactile sense of feeling that empowerment, I think we, have lost that sense of what we really can do if we were in partnership, if we were in solidarity. I think, all of the social media and everything to a certain extent has served to also divide us,
Very much so. And I'd like to add, has added yet another platform for corporate control. It's inevitable that at some point it's going to cost to get online. I mean, it's already so bad with any site you go to. You have to sit through some 15 to 30 second garbage for some product nobody cares about and you don't need and you don't want and isn't an addition to anybody's life or the world. And it interrupts your own ability to pursue information or knowledge or whatever it is. But the thing that I'm noticing more and more is while lots of people can show up to do something after it's over, like the flash mob or even the spring rising that ran from country to country, which I still think was in part facilitated by technology and excitatory waves, which particularly can affect men through their hormones, interestingly enough. But when you look at the follow-up, there's not a lot that comes of it. It's like there's these massive overthrows, and then things kind of go back to some other totalitarian something by somebody else, maybe somebody else that they were opposed to, maybe somebody else they were for, but it doesn't seem to progress to something greater than what was in place. The totalitarianism almost seemed to have held some sort of modest balance in place, and then when it falls apart, the crucifying of the community is even worse.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder what's going to happen with these, you know, these marches, you know, from these black men who, you know, have been, you know, have been killed by police. I think they, what they are doing out there, it is the current best hope to see a grassroots movement accomplish something, because you're right, you know, we have these sporadic momentary rises, but then they sort of dissipate and nothing happens.
Well, and can I ask you a question of what you have seen in interviewing all the people you have? Because what I see is that it's almost like a pariah feeding frenzy. It might be a good story or bad story. It doesn't really matter. All the media does the same thing because that's the business they're in, is to catch your attention. And if they're not on the main topic that everybody else is on, then the viewer will go somewhere else. But what none of them, for the most part, do is really talk about issues. I have yet to hear a cogent discussion on why it is that there's such violence in our cities, and nobody's talking about the drug war. Nobody's talking about that this is war, folks. This is war. This is not just about black and white and black men and white men. This is a war on our cities by the federal government against the citizens of every state, and it is the longest civil war in the history of the world. And nobody talks about it for what it is. It's a drug war.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot wrong, you know, and that's just, you know, one of the conversations that we're not having. And I go back to the corporate media, you know, if it's not something that they want to carry, then it doesn't get any exposure. And if it doesn't benefit them to carry it, then, you know, it's not going to be heard. I mean, how many marches did people do in the street and, you know, and nobody even, you know,
knew
nobody
it happened.
Even heard about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think because of that, I think that also thwarts people from getting together, because they, you know, let's face it, when we see other people doing it, it gives us permission to act in kind. But if those sorts of, if that sort of information is being squashed, then, you know, we just have this sense of I think, a feeling of powerlessness. And I don't know, Zoe, I think it really all goes to education. Mm-hmm. I think this is a long-term battle that we're in. And, you know, as we were saying at the, you know, in the first hour, you know, mythology shapes our culture. I think we have made a lot of progress in the last few decades when you think about it. I interviewed Patrick McCollum on my show, who now he addresses Congress and, you know, presidents, and he's going to be speaking to the Prime Minister of India soon about the plight of women. And he said, Karen, 40 years ago, he said, my house was threatened to be firebombed because I dared mention the sacred feminine or goddess in public. He said, you're not seeing that happen anymore. You know, Rhianne Eisler in the film Femme that we were both in, Women Healing the World, a wonderful documentary your listeners might want to Google and listen to, because it offers wonderful solutions, you know, to these problems. You know, she said, we are living at a time where we can say these kinds of things and not be killed for it. So on the one hand, you know, it feels like we're not making progress, but I think on the other hand, we are. You know, it might be two steps forward and one step back, but I think it is going to be a constant struggle. You know, you hear Gloria Felt and the women who have been, you know, trying to help the women's movement say, you know, just when we think we are finished fighting the battle and we can move on to other things, we have to fight the battle all over again.
Right.
I think it's going to continue to be that way until the world that we want is the norm, you know, because the way things are right now has been this way for an awful long time. And I think it has to start to penetrate the psyches of more people that, you know, we can create a new normal.
Well, and
we have to do it together.
Yeah, I read in your book, We Have to Take a Break. You know, it's interesting that one of your guests, I don't recall which one, was talking about these 20-year cycles that, you know, the pendulum will swing, and for 20 years it'll go one way, and 20 years more it'll go the other way. And when I think about the work that each generation does, hopefully for the subsequent generation, when we come back, I want to talk about one of your guests who was a drummer, who talks about how women actually, how everybody born is more than they think they are based on how we're carried in the womb of a mother. I mean, there was a fascinating little fact I learned from your book I didn't know. Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. Karen Tate is our guest. You can learn more about Dr. Reverend Karen Tate at her website, www.karentate.com.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hofberger. I'm director and founder at the American Visionary Art Museum in Baltimore. Our website is www.avam.org. And we're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zoe and Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Dr. Karen Tate. Her book, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World. It's a wonderful book. It's a collection of such extraordinary men and women who are really devoting themselves to bringing equality to our world and stability to our earth and expansion of our awareness overall. So I mentioned before the break that I learned something from your book literally I had never thought about. And it was a statement by Lane Redman, who you'll tell us about this person and all her drumming. But she commented that all the eggs a woman will ever have are formed in her when she's a fetus of 4 months old. So what it means is that all of the eggs a woman will have been inside the grandmother for at least 4 months before the fetus will actually create all the eggs she will have. So therefore, the child that is born is really been partially incubated in the grandmother, which made me rethink something I learned recently from an Apache elder, Judy Tallwing, whose art, along with my husband, is at the current AVAM exhibit here in Baltimore at the Visionary Art Museum. She said, in the Apache tradition, you'll find this interesting, when there are issues, because the son-in-law comes to live with the family, it's the grandmother who talks to the son-in-law and the daughter, not the mother. So if there's a dispute between the daughter and the son-in-law, the mother doesn't get involved, the grandmother does.
Well, you know, I think these indigenous cultures are so much more wise than us, don't you?
I do. I actually, you know, do.
I mean, we still have, we still have Native American cultures in our country who adhere to the matriarchal values where the assets are passed from the mother to the daughter. And, you know, you think about how beneficial that is, because if a husband and wife don't make it, as so many marriages don't, then the wife and the children aren't left at the margins of society, as so happens today in the case of divorce. You know, the husband can just, you know, go on back to his family, and, you know, the wife and the children, you know, stay with the, with her maternal clan, and the assets aren't lost, you know, because everything stays along the maternal line. And, you know, we also know, I mean, you sort of touched on it briefly, but, you know, we're covering so many things. You touched on earlier how the Iroquois, really informed our founding fathers about democracy, because if it wasn't for the grandmothers of these Iroquois people, you know, they were the ones that determined who was going to be chief. They were the ones that had the final word on if they were going to go to war. Now, to compare that to our society, who not only devalues women, but the grandmothers are invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're useless. They're somebody relegated to an old folks' home as if, you know, they have nothing left to offer society. And, I really do, you know, as you said earlier as well, you know, when you said about the, you know, indigenous peoples and other cultures, you know, they are really the ones who are at the forefront.
And they may. I've said
this. Trying to help us save the earth.
Well, not only that, I think what many of us believe, and I think they themselves have begun to appreciate the prophecy in their own traditions that has always said this, that they will be the holders of the earth as things come apart. And certainly we're in great time of change. Earth changes, consciousness changes, etc., whether it's on planet or off planet. But we have a lot of forces at work relative to our little tiny existence here on this little tiny planet, where there's presumably billions of others like it, not just a couple hundred, not just one or two. So it's interesting when you think of, all right, so what's the main mission here on Earth if it's not the proper use of free will? So when we turn to that, though, I don't want to leave, though, Lane Redman, because I think drumming is such a fascinating subject, and there was so much discussion towards the end of your book about drumming, showing us that this rhythm that the child hears inside the womb of the mother's blood is really what drumming replicates, as does reggae music, the heartbeat. Share with us some of the things that Lane Redman has taught.
Well, you know, Lane, toward the end of her life, we knew she was not well, and she had been on my radio show a number of times, and I play her music. She's contributed so much to women. Besides her wonderful book, When the Drummers Were Women, you know, teaching us about that history that had been lost, you know, something else we didn't know, you know, that nobody bothered to uncover in patriarchal society, you know, women's roles as, you know, as musicians. You know, music is such an important, you know, part of our lives. You know, it helps us, you know, it speaks to our quality of life. I mean, what you just described about, you know, it connects us back to that primal source, the heartbeat. I think it's also instrumental in maybe helping us achieve a trance, you know, to like maybe reach our higher self or, you know, connect with that sacred source. And Lane did so much on that subject, you know, whether it was just teaching us about women drumming and, you know, creating her own line of drums, but she also taught us about the, you know, the bee priestesses of Greece. And we were so lucky to have her. And she passed away a few months before it was time to send in her essay for the you know, for the anthology, but we had been discussing that she wanted to contribute to it, and fortunately the folks who are in charge of her intellectual property, you know, understood that she was wanted to be a participant in the book. So we, you know, have a memorial to her there in the final chapter, so that her work would be known to a wider audience, because there's just so much there.
Looking at all the various people you've interviewed and all the topics we've really touched on, and it's kind of like a round robin without it being deeply structured. The thing that strikes me most challenging is why information isn't enough anymore for people to make the right choice. I remember, and I've talked to a lot of activists about this, and this has come up often in my programming over the decades, is having been involved since I was 14, and I'll soon be 61. It's a long time to have worked on ecological sustainability and social justice. And, you know, it'll take several more lifetimes for us to keep working to evolve, to be the kind of humans we're meant to be, and to have the good earth society that I know we're capable and will one day manifest. I have total faith in humanity to come out on the right side eventually. But getting there is a long ride. And when I look at all of the challenges, what I was about to say is all of us who are the older activists have really become quite surprised that information didn't do the trick. And that it wasn't about showing people GMOs. That's a favorite topic of mine, because it's one of the most destructive practices on the planet today. It's destroying our seed bank. It's interfering with this, with nutrition. It's destroying the animal population. It's bad for the human population. There's nothing good about genetically modified organisms as a food system. It's destroying agriculture. And it means that we could all have famine because the seeds that come from these products don't regenerate. So if you put GMO food in the ground, all the seeds that come from it are dead seed. It doesn't regrow another plant. Unlike the beautiful design of the Creator, whereas you take a tomato and one tomato will provide 1,000 more tomatoes. So
right.
GMOs is a good example where the science has already proven how detrimental it is to the animal insect population. It's already proven what it does to the human population, leading to all sorts of detrimental and life-threatening diseases, including cancer and gastrointestinal diseases, etc. And yet we have the corporations lobbying Congress right now to increase the amount of GMOs that will be all over this country. They've outlawed it in much of Europe, in much of the world, but not here in America, the great brave world of, you know, the newest thing that the corporation can dream up. Why is information not enough?
You know, as I'm hearing you listen, you know, if you could see me, I'm shaking my head and shaking my head. You know, here's I think what might be part of it, though. You know, you and I know this stuff because we are in this bubble, but there are so many people who don't have the information yet. I think that's one of the things. You know, for instance, you know,
Or before you pass that point, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think of Argonne right now. They just had a voter ballot on the right to know that there are genetically modified foods wherever they are, and the corporations have dumped millions and millions and millions of dollars into the campaign to put out false information, complete
yeah.
propaganda. I mean, there's not a single thing about what they say in their advertisements that is true. It does not increase the food supply. It does not give you a better food supply. It does not in any way impact famine. It has not in any way improved agriculture. And so now they have a recall vote, and the politics of it is they're exempting all these people who voted already for the measure so that in all likelihood the corporations will come out on top.
Well, and that's where I was going, that I don't think everybody does know the information that you and I know because there's so much disinformation out there. If you can just raise doubt in the average person's mind, mm-hmm. then on top of raising doubt, you tell them that jobs may be at stake or maybe they're going to pay a nickel more for something, and then they're not going to vote for it, you know? I mean, I hate to say it, but there are way too many sheeple out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the very same thing happened here in California. You know, the GMO measure was winning, you know, where we were going to be able to have our food labeled. And just like what you said happened in Oregon, you know, corporations come in, dump all of this money, and, you know,
buy all the airtime, basically.
Mm-hmm. Buys all the airtime and starts changing people's mind. And, you know, suddenly it's, you know, and everything starts going in the other direction. You know, this isn't going to sound positive, but I'll put it out there anyway, and I'd like to see what you think about this. I'll ask you this question.
All right.
I'll put on my interviewer's hat. You know, sometimes I think, like with climate change, you know, I think, I'm not a climate denier. You know, I have not fallen victim to the massive amounts of money that the oil and gas industry have, you know, put into the system. You know, I believe that climate change is going to happen. And interestingly, sometimes I look at it from the perspective that climate change is Mother Nature, that she will eventually have the last word. And it's through climate change that we can maybe start to right the ship,
mm-hmm.
because we are going to have to start thinking about not just the few, but we're going to have to start thinking about the many because of, you know, security interests. You know, the famine, you know, people are going to be relocated, all of these different things. And I can't help but wonder if we do end up having food shortages.
There's no question we will.
All of these things, though, we have been doing things in this screwed up manner for so long that it is going to take something huge and massive to you know, sort of get the ship going in a different direction. I really sort of believe that that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we call this in Hasidic Judaism being pushed from behind. We can either change in joy, walk forward to the future in joy, or we get pushed from behind through suffering. And I used to say this a decade ago, that terrorism and earth changes would bring the world together. Now, that doesn't mean there's going to be the world as we know it, nor the billions of people that are currently alive or not still going to be alive. So there's going to be, I believe, a great deal of suffering and a great deal of loss of life that was not necessary for our development on this planet. I do agree with you that the earth and the natural systems always can take care of restoration and rebalance and transformation into something else, as will we. But to think that it's taking such devastation that has so much to do with our own handiwork in order to bring us to right stewardship and right relation is a tragedy. You know, it's a tragic story that will have a good outcome. I believe that. And I do believe that. But we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years from now, I believe, before we will get ourselves all together. And in the meantime, for those of us that have been working this entire lifetime at trying to bring balance to our society, to watch it disassemble, which it is, and that's a necessary thing, and it's a growth, the same way a seed shell decays and then a new seed comes. It breaks my heart to see the kind of suffering that's going on and the more that we're going to have, because we already have millions of people dislocated worldwide, and we don't yet appreciate how to set up for a world in motion, because that's what we're going to be. Us too. Take New York City or Miami or, you know, New Delhi or any of the great cities, 66 of the major cities or port cities. We're done. Anyway, it's not the end of the world. It's just the end of the world as we know it. So we'll be back for our conclusion with our guest, Dr. Reverend Karen Tate. Her book, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, Conversations to Reshape Our World, a Changemaker 2014 release. Go to www.karentate.com.
Hi, this is filmmaker Heather Taylor, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zohara Hieronymus. A special thank you to Dr. Hieronymus, who interviewed me about my documentary, Breaking Through the Clouds, the First Women's National Air Derby. This film is the inspiring true story of Amelia Earhart and 19 other female pilots who raced across the country in August 1929. You can learn more about my film at breakingthroughtheclouds.com.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Dr. Reverend Karen Tate has been with us throughout our program this evening. Voices of the Sacred Feminine is her book, Conversations to Reshape Our World. It's really a beautiful anthology of so many extraordinary men and women who have worked their entire lives for equality on Earth, rebalancing our planet, and going in the right direction to have a sustainable future, one that's just as well as free. So, Karen, what are some of the things maybe we haven't touched on that you wanted to be sure we did?
Well, I wanted to, I think, punctuate the idea that, you know, to express to your listeners just how big the tent of the sacred feminine is. You know, I think there's a lot of disinformation out there, you know, people who would maybe hope that folks wouldn't look into this because it means change. And so they tell us that, oh, you know, the only people interested in this are angry women or maybe lesbian women and, you know, it's crazy stuff, you mm-hmm. know, or that, you know, feminism is a bad thing, you know, we're all just victims and, you know, who would want to be a feminist? And, you know, I would just say, please don't listen to that. You know, all that's doing is helping, you know, if you believe that, you're just, you know, helping someone help you be complicit in your own oppression. You know, because there, as this book proves, you know, and the men I've interviewed on my radio show for the last 8 years proves that this is so much about, you know, women and men, because, you know, patriarchy has also hurt men, maybe not quite as much as it's hurt women, but they have also been at a disadvantage, and you know, they've been, you know, put in narrow little boxes, you know, just as women have, but you know, women only. Only more so. So, you know, I would say take responsibility for your own education. Don't just automatically believe everything you hear from the pulpit or hear at the dinner table. You know, be responsible for your own education and, you know, find out who you're voting for. You know, find out what's happening with the issues. You know, we can't afford to be sheeple. You know, we just have to take responsibility for being good citizens and the best human beings that we can be on the planet. We have to start focusing more on caring and sharing and, you know, create a world that's about the we and the us and not tolerate what has been sort of shoved down our throat and told, you know, we've been told that that's always the way it's been and that it can never change, because it can change. It's just up to us to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing some research for my fourth book, and it's on these extraordinary traditions worldwide that are based on very particular animals, and they're called spirit animals, the white buffalo, the white bear, the white wolf. Anyway, and it goes on and on. And so I've been doing this research, and I was reading on the bear, because that's the chapter I'm working on right now, and came across many of the native stories as well as the Greek stories of how we got Ursa Major and Ursa Minor, the Great Bear and the Little Bear, the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper in our heavens. And when I read the indigenous tribal peoples, there's always this elevation of the bears as the mother and the cub and the, you know, and the preservation of the north and the holding the doorway for the spirit. Then you read the Greek tales, which are the ones that are really the ones that are in our culture, if not consciously at our collective unconscious. And it's all about this bear being Callisto, who was a virgin that attended to the goddess Artemis, who was also a virgin huntress, who swore they'd stay that way their whole life. And Zeus rapes her, she gets pregnant. And all of the Western stories, in every situation, the women, as much as the men, demonize Callisto, who has been raped and impregnated and then discarded and disenfranchised and sent away. And I thought to myself, my God, if that's not how we don't treat unwed women, young women with children, and orphans, I don't know what other story would better describe it. And that's when I realized it's really true that our mythologies and the stories that we hold to, whether it's a personal story, a collective story, one that we learned in history, one we learned from mythologies, even those are disinformation.
Well, or think about, you know, to piggyback on what you just said, you know, think about when a woman is raped. Who do they blame?
Yes, exactly.
Was she out too late? What was she wearing? You know, I had a show just recently on about male speak. And, you know, we talked about, for instance, when men kill women or abuse women, the media will say, well, what's wrong with our violent culture? But when do you ever hear them say, what's wrong with men? What's wrong? Why are men so violent in this culture? Because, you know, it's as if we cannot name the perpetrator.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
We put it in this sort of vague, nebulous context, rather than saying, you know, men, you know, you're the ones that are causing all the problems. You know, maybe you want to relinquish authority for a while because you're not doing such a good job. And or you think about the women over, you know, in Sharia law, you know, a woman can be raped and, you know, and then she's the one that brings shame on the family.
And then she's the one that gets killed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's extraordinary. And that was what these Greek myths all did, is either they'd try to kill the child or kill Callisto or exile them. And I went, oh, my God. And, you know, in Bulgaria, when they outlawed abortion and contraception, they ended up with 20,000 street orphans. In India, there's 20 million orphans.
It's really uncomfortable.
In the streets. So, but, you know, anyway, yeah.
Well, you know, if there's a minute left to say,
yes.
You know, the sacred, you know, going back to these ideas
yes.
that, you know, our mythology shapes our culture, if we really started reclaiming and retelling and embracing the pre-patriarchal stories of the sacred feminine, that gives us something to counter, you know, the damage that the patriarchal myths have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just one example is the lion-headed Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. You know, she has become a sort of the symbol of female empowerment. She's independent, she's strong, she's tenacious, she's also a healer, she's also a mother, she's playful. So you have this, you know, this whole woman who, you know, isn't sort of subject to male domination. You know, she can go out there and do it alone, and she can protect herself. You know, she teaches women that you can say no without feeling guilt, that you can set healthy boundaries. Where, you know, the culture that we live in today, you know, how often are women made to feel guilty
yes.
when they tell a man no?
Absolutely. Or tell anybody no. That's why I joke, menopause, I have a new book for it. It's called N.O. We're in the know.
I hear you. Well, Zoe, you know, I did want to tell your listeners, if you have a minute,
I'm going to be
co-leading a sacred tour to Turkey with a wonderful gentleman who is actually in the anthology we've been talking about. His name is Dr. James Rietveld. We are going to be leading a tour to Turkey in May for 16 days, visiting a plethora of sacred sites of goddess, from archaeological sites to, you know, to Greek temples, to wonderful museums. We're going to experience the whirling dervishes and Turkish baths, and we're going to do ritual at a lot of these sacred sites because, you know, oftentimes they're totally empty, you know,
mm-hmm.
so we have quiet time. So anyway, I just wanted to put it out there that if someone has been looking to, you know, make a sacred journey, maybe wants to discover the sacred feminine, maybe they're history buffs, you know, this would be a great opportunity for them to go with people that know about this sort of stuff. Dr. Rietveld is an archaeologist and a religion scholar. You know, I bring the feminist perspective and the priestess angle and the ritual skills to the equation. It will be a trip that I'm sure our, you know, the people who come with us.
I'm going to have to just tell everybody to go to your website, and thank you for being with us this evening, KarenTate.com.
Now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Sal Chiangresso.